Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to hear about the civilian team that supports the Minnesota National Guard and meet one of our state's Yellow Ribbon Colleges. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Our state's Yellow Ribbon Network is an incredible resource as we work to connect service members, veterans, military families, employers, and communities. They help ensure the resilience of those who serve. Started right here in Minnesota, our Yellow Ribbon program is now the model for networks across the nation. Since we proclaimed our first Yellow Ribbon Network in 2008, hundreds more have emerged in counties, cities, communities, and at companies statewide. These self-sustaining networks draw together agencies, community leaders, and volunteers. They strive to support the service members, veterans, and military families of any age and from any era that live and work in their area. The continued growth and improvement of this program is vitally important as service members and their families continue to adapt to increasing demands and training requirements we see across the force. To all of our incredibly generous and dedicated Yellow Ribbon volunteers, thank you. You help ensure our service members and their families remain resilient and ready to serve. If you're ready to join a Yellow Ribbon network near you or make your large company or community Yellow Ribbon, please visit beyondtheyellowribbon.org. That's beyondtheyellowribbon.org.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. Mr. Don Kerr serves as the state of Minnesota as the executive director for the Department of Military Affairs, the state agency that administers the National Guard. He retired from the Minnesota National Guard as a colonel in March 2008 after serving in a myriad of roles over a 28-year military career, and he received a brevet promotion to Brigadier General in March 2017. And Brevet General Don Kerr, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here again.
It's always good to have you back, sir. Hope you're staying well during the COVID crisis.
I am, Tom. Along with about 25% of our agency employees, I've been able to work from home predominantly here since the governor put the restrictions on working, and it's actually working out better than I expected. Our connectivity has been very good. We've been doing a lot of video teleconference meetings, but basically we're able to do the things that we were able to do before, just a little bit differently. A lot of contract signatures going electronically that used to be wet signatured, but it was time for us to make that transition anyway. So this has been a good forcing function for some of those things.
Very good, sir. I'm hoping you can explain to our listeners the duties and what the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs does. We've had, of course, General Jensen on the show many, many times, and he's referred to as the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. But he's also heads up the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs as a commissioner, and he serves as such. He serves on the board with the governor.
Yes, Tom. So back in 1921, some federal law was passed, and they sent something they called model statutes out to the states to adopt within the states to set up the way the National Guard is organized today. So you probably understand that the National Guard is in this weird state and federal situation where most of the time the National Guard serves under Title 32 of U.S. Code, which means they are under the control of the governors, and the governor functions as our commander-in-chief. When they're called to active service in support of the federal government, they serve in Title 10, because Title 10 of U.S. Code is the part that governs military activities in the United States Armed Forces. So Title 10 and 32 establish this dual-status National Guard that is mostly under the control of the states, but also has some responsibilities to the federal government, and they have special authority granted to the Adjutant General to have authority in some Title 10 over federal resources while serving in Title 32 under state control. So the Department of Military Affairs is the cabinet-level agency inside state government that has the responsibility to oversee and support the activities of the National Guard, and the Adjutant General serves as the military leader of the National Guard, but he's also the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs.
Thank you, sir. We're speaking with Mr. Don Kerr, the executive director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Don, can you explain to us what is the mission then of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs?
So our role, and my role as the executive director, I basically work for the Adjutant General to help oversee the state agency component of the National Guard. And we provide support by doing things like providing security at Camp Ripley and at the air bases and at the Army Aviation Support Facilities. We provide other services through something called a Master Cooperative Agreement, where we actually work on behalf of the federal government, sort of functioning like a contractor to do things like planning facilities maintenance activities and executing those and other things like that. And one of the things I think we're going to talk about today is the maintenance of our fleet of armories that have both federal and state connections to them. So that's kind of what we spend our time doing.
Don, I think we had you on, and I think at the time it might have been Commissioner Herkey, but a couple of years ago we were talking about the 30-year plan that you have developed to take care of those armories, and I'm sure that's a work in process.
It is, Tom. We've got about 63 armories on our books. That varies a little bit day to day because we're working on building some and we're also selling some. We do have a couple of facilities that we've divested of in the last 5 years or so. But we've got our oldest armory is the New Ulm Armory that's 105 years old. And, of course, our newest ones, our Stillwater facility just came on board about 2 years ago. And we're going to be opening a new armory at Arden Hills, even though we've got two other relatively new armories at Arden Hills. But a new home for the 34th Infantry Division that's currently under construction. And we expect to occupy that this fall. So, obviously, varying in range from 1 to 105, there are a lot of different maintenance requirements, and they have different needs. And, of course, different communities have different uses for those armories as well. So to figure out how to use the dollars that we receive from the state and federal government to get our best bang for the buck, to keep our older facilities renovated and to construct new facilities is an ongoing challenge. And, of course, a lot of variables there because we never know for sure what the federal dollars are going to be available. And at the same time, we don't know what state dollars are going to be available. So, It's a delicate balancing act, and that's why we think we have to look pretty deep to at least have a plan ready so that we can either execute the plan or retard the plan a little bit if we don't get the funding that we want or accelerate the plan in some cases if we get unexpected funding that allows us to do renovations or replacements.
And, sir, this time of year when the legislature's in session, I know that you spend a lot of time over on the Hill trying to answer some budget questions and see what your budget might be looking like next year.
Well, suddenly not so much this year, Tom. The legislature is doing like good Minnesotans everywhere. They've figured out how to operate in the current constraints, but there's a lot less face-to-face contact. We are hoping that there's going to be a bonding bill this year, and I know there's a lot of question about what the right thing to do is, but I think Commissioner Franz is going to go give some insight to the legislature next week about what they think the economic forecast is. But, of course, their position, the Minnesota Management Budget, and I think the governor's position is that, you know, bonding bills are a good economic stimulus to keep jobs moving in Minnesota. And in that current bonding bill, the governor has supported a request on our behalf of nearly $12 million, $11.895, for four projects. Our Rosemont Armory is ready for a redesign and a renovation. And since that's so big, we've decided to split that project into design and construction because we think we're going to find a lot of things in design that will give us a better idea what the actual cost for the Rosemont renovation will be. We've also got $5 million on the state side, and that'll be matched by $5 million on the Fed side for a renovation in the Moorhead Readiness Center, $3.25 for Marshall, and $2.2 for Fergus Falls. So we've kind of got a little bit of a mixture between metropolitan and non-metropolitan areas there, but all those facilities are due for renovation, and we're hopeful that we'll get favorable consideration from the legislature as they move toward a bonding bill hopefully this year.
And, sir, the state legislature has got their hands full with this COVID crisis, but we're also in a situation where interest rates are as low as they've been in my lifetime, and hopefully they understand that and that they'll fund some of these projects because it's as cheap as it's ever going to get.
Yes, if a fellow had to borrow money, this is the time to do it, apparently. And they've been very generous with us, Tom. 2 years ago, we received almost $13 million in a bonding bill. And the projects that we're currently conducting there, we're renovating the St. Cloud Readiness Center. We just wrapped up the Wadena Readiness Center. We're working on the Grand Rapids Readiness Center, and we're about to kick off on the Brainerd Readiness Center. So the projects that we requested 2 years ago are well in hand moving forward. But, you know, the challenge is when you have a large number of buildings like that, eventually all the roofs go bad. And if you figure 20 to 30 years on a roof, just for the roofs alone, we kind of need to get into about three facilities every year just to keep the roofs in good order. Now, we can stretch that a little bit sometimes because sometimes they hold up better than that. But general rule of thumb is we try to do three renovations a year. And so we're more or less on that track right now. If we get these four approved over the coming biennium, that'll be, I guess that'll be eight over 2 years. So that's just over three a year. That's on the glide path of where we think we need to be successful to be able to keep our armories in good repair and available for training our soldiers and available as community resources for the people living out in greater Minnesota particularly.
Very good, sir. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Mr. Don Kerr, Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. And Don, in that first segment, we kind of just referred to a little bit the new division headquarters out in Arden Hills. I understand it's just about ready, and I think the division pretty excited about moving in there this year.
Yeah, Tom, it's going to be a beautiful facility. That was a long time coming. In fact, we initiated that way back when I was still in uniform, and it was a rush project in the Department of Defense. But finally coming to fruition, it's going to be absolutely wonderful. It'll give capability that the division has struggled with in their current facility, even though it was a state-of-the-art back in 1990. A lot of things have changed, and the new structure will really make life for the division staff better. They'll be able to do better training and better accommodate the battlefield functions that they operate with currently, as opposed to being designed around something that was 30 years old.
And, sir, I saw an announcement this morning that the director of the Army National Guard, Lieutenant General Hokanson, announced today the newest Division Artillery Headquarters will be assigned to the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division.
Yeah, we're pretty happy about that, Tom. This is it's interesting how things come and go around. There used to be something called the DIVARDI, Division Artillery, in all of the combat divisions. And in the restructuring that occurred in about 2004 and 5, something called the Unit of Excellence, I believe, they restructured the division to absorb the staff functions that used to be in the DIVARDI. And now, as often happens, the Army has kind of looked at what they did and decided perhaps we should take a step back, and now they're resurrecting the Division Artillery, and the 34th Division Artillery will be very proud to be the first one stood back up in the Army National Guard. So we're looking forward to that.
Very good, sir. And I wanted to ask you, I saw in a release here in February, it sounds like the Minnesota National Guard and the division are going to be pretty busy this year and next. We've got 700 soldiers in the Middle East. We've got some 700 more going out to the Horn of Africa. We've got some going to Afghanistan. We've got military police going to Guantanamo. And we've got the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team going back out to the NTC, where they're at about the top of the training regimen. Does that complicate your job when they're that busy with all these deployments?
Well, Tom, I don't know if that complicates my job so much. Obviously, typically the resources from the federal side flow in accordance with what the tasks are. So, you know, we may have to spin things up, but we're provided the resource to do it. It isn't that bad. COVID-19 situation worldwide is throwing a little bit of a wrinkle into things, though, because that is adding some complexity to how the Army and the Air Force go about mobilizing units, deploying units, and demobilizing units to get the soldiers and airmen back to their families. But the staffs are working through those challenges, and basically the mission will continue. We just have to do it a little bit differently. We're also looking very carefully at the training requirements. Obviously, you mentioned the 1st Brigade Combat Team going back out to the National Training Center. That's kind of a big deal, a lot of moving parts, and that also is complicated by COVID-19. But our team is working with Forces Command and all the other entities that have to be engaged to make sure that we can still perform that mission safely in the COVID-19 environment, and we expect to be able to accomplish that. It's a big task, but we typically get them done even when they're big, so we expect to get this one done too.
Sir, the COVID-19 is a worldwide pandemic, and I understand that it's hit in Africa, it's hit everywhere, and we've got 700 soldiers going out to the Horn of Africa. I'm guessing that our soldiers are having to become experts on COVID-19 and how to avoid it and how to do some social distancing and still get your mission accomplished. And I know some time ago that we had a deployment scheduled to go to help with the Ebola, and I was told by Sergeant Ben, who's better able to learn how to deal with this and to go over there and help than the United States military? And I think I probably got the same attitude going with those soldiers going to the Horn of Africa. They're going to learn about it, and they're going to fix it.
Well, Sergeant Ben is wise beyond his years and rank. That's a true statement. And, you know, our guys will rise to the challenge. Obviously, this changes some things, but they'll get it done, and the appropriate guidance will come out from the highest levels, and the mission will be accomplished one way or the other. So, it complicates things, but nothing that's beyond the capacity of your Minnesota National Guard.
We're speaking to Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, on Minnesota Military Radio. Don, one of the things you and I have talked about off and on for years is a thing called sequestration, where the federal government was cutting budgets and so forth. And is that thing still around, or did that expire?
I think there's one more year left on it, but it effectively has been circumnavigated. So it's no longer a grave concern. Obviously, the effect that COVID-19 is going to have on the defense budget is a larger concern right now. So I think, though, I will also say that, you know, sometimes there are opportunities in chaos, and this is definitely a chaotic time. Right now, we aren't seeing any decrement to our federal funding for the short term, and I kind of expect so much money has been appropriated to fight COVID-19, and because the bureaucracy kind of slows things down from time to time, there may be some opportunities come late in the federal fiscal year for organizations that have their proverbial act together may be able to find some opportunities in this. We don't have any concerns, particularly on the federal side, about funding next year beyond what the general concerns would be, and that, of course, we always get concerned when we start getting to the end of a federal fiscal year about them having an Appropriations Act and an Authorization Act in place prior to the beginning of the year so that we don't have to operate under a continuing resolution, because that always makes things very complicated. But right now, that's not the number one concern. Obviously, responding to this global pandemic and making sure that we can accomplish the missions that we have safely and provide the support that we need to the state of Minnesota in our other capacity as well, that's what's really important to us right now. And right now, we aren't seeing any particular federal impediments to that.
Sir, my experience and what I've seen in the last 10 years is the soldiers and the airmen of the Minnesota National Guard are resilient. And they learn how to fix things. They learn how to deal with things. How are our soldiers and airmen doing? Are they in the midst of this COVID-19? Are they holding up pretty well?
I think they're holding up extremely well. And of course, our state employees, and most of those are civilian, though some of them are military, and some of them are coincidentally in the National Guard, have really responded well to the challenges that we've had. Technically, our military guys that provide a lot of our network support, obviously, suddenly we put 25% of our state workforce out on telework, and that creates some huge challenges because we're operating on the Department of Defense Information Network, and there are a lot more firewalls on that than there are on your typical Internet operation. So our guys rose to that challenge, and were able to put the devices out, and the state agency, too, did a great job with this. Minnesota IT Services did a great job on the state side, providing the necessary bandwidth and devices and subscriptions to accounts, really did a nice job responding to that. So beyond the soldiers and airmen, who, of course, will always rise to the challenge, and, you know, they've been involved in a lot of things behind the scenes. We really haven't had to spend very much of the state's dime on state active duty yet because we've had some federal resources that we've been able to apply toward the COVID-19 fight. But I think we've been consulting with other state agencies and providing what we think is value to help the big team, beat this thing back and make sure that Minnesotans have the services they need. So morale, I think, is high, Tom. It's somewhat frustrating, but generally speaking, everyone's responding well, and we're getting the mission accomplished and almost to a surprising degree of effectiveness, in my opinion.
Sir, we've only got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for us today about the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs?
Tom, we appreciate serving the state, and I want to thank you again for what you do with Minnesota Military Radio. It's extremely important to help get the message for our military and veterans affairs departments out to the people of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, and thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
That was Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs and Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to meet one of our state's Yellow Ribbon colleges. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet one of our state's Yellow Ribbon colleges. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
The Minnesota Commanders Task Force, or CTF, is made up of 9 congressionally chartered veterans service organizations here in Minnesota. They include the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled American Veterans, Vietnam Veterans of America, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Marine Corps League, AMVETS, Jewish War Veterans, and the Paralyzed Veterans of America. The CTF acts as a single voice for veterans of Minnesota. They meet monthly to discuss the issues affecting veterans and their families and facilitate communication among veteran service organizations. The CTF promotes legislative initiatives and represents veterans and their families on the Hill. The CTF is also an advisory board to me, and for that I am very grateful. I look forward to working with the commanders in the upcoming year.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said at the beginning of the segment, we're going to meet one of our state's Yellow Ribbon colleges, and that is going to be Central Lakes College, which became a Yellow Ribbon company on September 25th, 2019. And here to talk about that with us today is Annette Kuiper, the Director of Military Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs. Annette, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Annette, you've been busy out there for years and years building communities and gathering up corporations and colleges. And how many Yellow Ribbon entities are we up to? How are you counting them these days?
Tom, we're up to 71 Yellow Ribbon companies. And one of the things that people might not know is, in addition to our wonderful companies throughout Minnesota, all the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities have committed to becoming a Yellow Ribbon company. And actually, the colleges have the same criteria that all the companies do as well, to hire veteran and service member employees, to be able to showcase in the community that they are partnering with our Yellow Ribbon networks in the community. But the additional requirement we have for the colleges is find ways to support their veteran students as well as their veteran and service member and military family employees. So they have an additional requirement in the state program. And Central Lakes College today is one of those that were doing so many good things even before they became a Yellow Ribbon company. It was wonderful to recognize them in September as a Yellow Ribbon company.
So we have two special guests with us today from Central Lakes College. Would you like to introduce them?
Sure, I would. Just a great partner that we've had from the very beginning. Teresa Harsha is the Director of Veteran Resources and the certifying official for Central Lakes College. She was the initial person that really brought forward to me that Central Lakes wanted to participate in this program and really help make it happen. And Paul Primesberger is here today. He's the Dean of Enrollment Management and Student Success, and his programming is very essential to becoming a Yellow Ribbon company as well. So welcome to Teresa and Paul today.
Teresa and Paul, welcome to the show. Teresa, I understand that you were a member of the North Dakota Army National Guard for a while, and you deployed to Iraq.
That is correct. From 1996, I got out in 2006, but in February 2003, we were activated and deployed until April 2004.
And I'll bet you when you got an opportunity to become the Director of Veteran Services for Central Lakes College, that was something that really appealed to you, having been served in the military.
My professional background is in education, so when this position came up, it really did marry two parts, both equally important personally, but professionally it just worked really well for me.
Well, congratulations. And Paul, I understand you're the Dean of Enrollment Management and Student Success. And were you involved in becoming, for Central Lakes, becoming a Yellow Ribbon entity?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's no question. Teresa was the engine of our effort and working closely with Annette and also our system office. I mean, they really drove this effort. And I was just fortunate enough to be on the what we called our Yellow Ribbon Committee that Teresa led. And we had our Vice President of Academic and Student Affairs, our HR Director, myself, Teresa, another one of our academic advisors, and a faculty member who were all part of that committee. And Teresa did just a phenomenal job of leading us through this effort, working closely with Annette and our system office representative to get it done. And we had a really beautiful ceremony in September to recognize it.
This is Minnesota Military Radio, and we're speaking with Teresa Harshaw and Paul Primesberger from the Central Lakes College about the process they went through to become a Yellow Ribbon company. And, Paul, while you were under the influence of Annette, I understand you had to make some commitments to become a Yellow Ribbon company.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Annette really puts you through your paces. You know, there are a number of standards that you have to meet. A lot of those are, you know, related to human resources issues in terms of hiring veterans and making sure that they're included in applicant pools and things like that. And then also, you know, obviously with Teresa as the head of the Veterans Resource Center, I mean, you know, she does such an incredible job of making sure that anything related to vets and veteran students are right at the forefront of everything we do at Central Lakes College.
And Teresa, I understand that you do some wonderful things internally to recognize veteran service member employees and students at Central Lake College.
We do. One of our biggest celebrations is coming up this year. It'll look a little different, but our graduation ceremony, we always honor not only our student veterans by awarding them a Patriot cord that they get to wear. It's a red, white, and blue honor cord that they can wear with their regalia. We've also extended that to our faculty and staff. So during the ceremony, they can also wear it. But then also during the ceremony, our president, during her opening remarks, makes it a point to address the community that's there and having all service members, current and former, to stand up and be recognized for their service.
And Paul, in this process, have you learned some best practices that other higher education institutions have developed for becoming Yellow Ribbon?
Yeah, you know, I think the first and foremost, because this really touches every aspect of veterans' resources and services at Central Lakes College, is that Teresa and the Veterans Resource Center is a deeply embedded part of our student services and of our academic advising. So Teresa is an equal member with everyone else in student services. She participates in all the initiatives, all the meetings. When we talk about admissions, enrollment, financial aid, scholarships, and, you know, she just does an excellent job of making sure that veterans and their concerns and their challenges are always at the forefront. And so we're always thinking about that from step one, no matter what we do. And so they're just, you know, that really, I think, is the most important best practice I can share, is that your Veterans Resource Center, your certifying official, be an equal and embedded part of your team.
And I'll bet it makes a difference for those veterans that go to school at Central Lakes College. They can go to that Veterans Resource Center for just about anything and feel pretty comfortable on campus.
I say that when a new student comes to our campus, I help that student navigate the process from the minute they walk in the door to the minute they walk across the stage and thereafter. It really is a process. Helping students navigate. The general population that I work with are people out of high school who joined the military, did 3, 5, 10 years, and now they're coming back. So not only are they coming back with this wealth of knowledge and experience from being in the military, but now they're coming back to a younger kid's game, college is associated more with those fresh out of high school graduates. The student population might look younger, might not have as much experience that they do. So how can we reward them for their service, honor them for their service, and help them to continue on with whatever it is they choose to do after?
Teresa and Paul, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about one of our new Yellow Ribbon companies, Central Lakes College, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach from the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, and Teresa Harshaw and Paul Primesberger from Central Lakes College, who became a Yellow Ribbon Company on September 25th, 2019. And Teresa, I want to come back to you. I understand that you found a way to connect with the community as a Director of Veteran Services there at Central Lakes Colleges and invite them out to the campus. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Central Lakes College is proud to host our local PTSD support group. It's mostly our older veterans, Vietnam-era veterans. We provide them a space to meet. We provide them with food and beverage. They can interact with younger kids on our campus and then just be present with each other, especially during winter months. A lot of our older veterans don't get out much, but they really do look forward to coming to campus, and we are happy to have them come. So on Tuesdays for lunch and then Thursday afternoons for dinner, they come on and they visit and they reminisce and they heal through our Veterans Center.
Teresa, you should put some of my fellow Vietnam veterans back to work. Tell them to get back into those classes and learn a few things.
You know, it has happened where some of our support group members have come back to class, either to audit a class, just to sit in on a class, or some of them have even completed our career and technical programs.
Well, very good. I'm sure you're a good recruiter in getting some of them back into the class. And, Paul, I want to come to you. What advice would you share with other organizations that might be considering becoming a Yellow Ribbon Company?
Yeah, well, you know, just the whole, you know, I think it was about a year-long process of Teresa getting the committee together. And, you know, just that process is so helpful because you're getting a perspective from all different parts of your college. Teresa is there, like I said, to raise issues related to veterans and how we can better support them and resource them. And so that just that whole process, you know, even if we wouldn't have received the recognition, was improving the way that we support and recognize our veterans, the way that we outreach with the community, the way that we connect with our faculty and staff about veteran students. So I would really encourage people to, you know, even if you don't get recognized, the process itself is extremely valuable.
Paul and Teresa, I want to congratulate you on the effort and welcome you as a Yellow Ribbon College. I wish you all the best. And Annette, I want to come back to you. I know that you usually have a spring conference, but due to the COVID-19, I think that's been delayed till this fall. Can you tell us where that's going to be?
Yes, we're going to host our fall conference with all of our Yellow Ribbon companies and key support partners. And our host for the fall, hopefully, is going to be the Minnesota Wild. But they will, again, follow COVID protocols to be able to have that. But we're hoping in September to go ahead and get that scheduled. This is a great opportunity for our companies and colleges to come together and share these wonderful best practices. And Central Lakes College has really led the way for other colleges and universities and organizations to really methodically look at every area of their organization to see how they can support service members, veterans, and military families. So they are a high standard to follow for other colleges. So congratulations to Central Lakes College.
And that fall conference will be a great opportunity for Paul and Teresa to meet a lot of your other Yellow Ribbon companies and establish some friendships all over Minnesota.
Yes, it builds their relationships. Paul and Teresa can share the wonderful best practices they have. And as I mentioned at the beginning, we're working with the rest of the Minnesota colleges and universities to become Yellow Ribbon, and the current ones are being mentors for the future colleges that want to join this program and join the partnership.
Great work, Annette, and I can't wait to see who you're going to bring to the show next.
Thank you.
That was Annette Kuiper, Director of Military Outreach from the Department of Military Affairs, and Teresa Harshaw and Paul Primesberger from Central Lakes College. Joining me now is Greg Peterson, who is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. Greg, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be back.
Greg, are you and our veterans all staying healthy out there during this COVID crisis?
Well, I think we are. Yeah, I'm healthy, and all of us CVSOs are working in various locations. I'm in my office. That's what my county has asked, is that we work in our office. Our doors are locked. Some CVSOs are at home. Some CVSOs are rotating in and out, those counties that have larger staff. So we're all working somehow.
Gloves and masks, and try to stay healthy, right?
Yes, and washing your hands. Oh, my goodness. About wash the skin off my hands.
Well, Greg, I think we wanted to talk today about vehicles for veterans. I understand that your association helps veterans.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit
about that. Tell me about it.
Go ahead.
I understand that you've helped some veterans get some vehicles.
I have. This is a unique program. It's very unknown. It's kind of a partnership between the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota and the County Veteran Service Officers. I act as the DAV's vehicle coordinator. And what happens is there are quite a few times when someone will say, I've got a van, a wheelchair van even, or a vehicle, and I'd like to donate it to a veteran. And we see a lot of those ads in the Tribune and stuff, donate your cars to veterans. Well, they don't really go to veterans. They go to that organization and they get sold. So what the DAV and I do is we actually match up a vehicle with a veteran that needs a vehicle, much like their donor connection program that matches up a wheelchair with a veteran that needs a wheelchair.
Well, I imagine you're looking for vehicles that are in good shape, not junkers.
We are. That's an unfortunate thing. Some people will think they want to, hey, I can get rid of this car. It's got 200,000 miles on it, and maybe it's only got 3 or 4 months left in it, but sure, some vet would take it. No, we really need something that's in good shape, that has a good battery, that's not leaking transmission fluid, for example. 100,000 miles, you know, cars go 100,000, 200,000 miles now, so it's okay to have high-mileage cars, but we're looking for something with, you know, it's dependable, because the veteran who doesn't have a car can't get to work. They can't get to their VA hospital appointments and things like that. They can't transport their children. It's really encumbering on a family that loses a vehicle, either due to maybe a wreck or their vehicle broke down and is irreparable.
So if our listeners have a vehicle that's in good shape and has a few years left on it, do they just call their county veteran service officer to let them know they'd like to donate it?
That would be the best route to go. Then those CVSOs will contact me, and we actually use the term vetting. I'm going to send out a notice to all the county veteran service officers. Hey, there's a wheelchair van available in this town. And I'll say, let me know if you have a veteran that needs a vehicle. And I'll tell you, usually within a matter of minutes, I have a half dozen CVSOs vying for it. Then we'll go through and we'll talk to them and find out exactly what the need is. The person that's going to get the vehicle needs to be able to obtain insurance. They have to be able to come up with the money for a title transfer fee. It's about $50. It's not that bad. And then we'll figure out how we're going to get these people together. We've had some very long-distance Pipestone to Mora donations, New Alum to Houston, Minnesota, down in the southeast corner. But we'll try and link them up together.
Good work, Greg. We've just got a little over a minute left. I know that you've formed a partnership with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on the disaster relief grants. How's that going?
That's going very well. My office alone has submitted about 40 claims. I'm going to be doing another one here in a couple of days. The state is now sending us some data, so the latest data we have is they have about 4,000 applications, and Commissioner Herkey has got every hand on deck that can possibly be working on these so they can get them approved as fast as possible. They told us they're getting about 100 a day now, but when it came out, it was about April 6th, I think it was. Yeah, that was Monday, April 6th. That was the first day, and boy, the first few days, they really had a tidal wave of claims coming in.
So once again, if our listeners, veterans, want to get that $1,000 disaster relief grant, they can talk to one of your county veteran service officers. You can help them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we would prefer to help them because we've got the ability to assemble the documents. We've got their military discharge. We know exactly the order it should go in, and we can electronically upload it, and we can keep track of it electronically and see how the progress is going on it.
Very good, Greg. We're just about out of time. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, I appreciate it, Tom. It's always good to be on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. That was Greg Peterson, the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the Brown County Veteran Service Officer. We're just about out of time. If you're a Minnesota veteran and you'd like to share your story, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Don Kerr, Executive Director of the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs, Teresa Harshaw and Paul Primesberger from Central Lakes College, Greg Peterson, the Brown County Veteran Service Officer, Commissioner Larry Herkey, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we talk about voting here in Minnesota and check in with our Vietnam veterans. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.